You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back. Hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning. George and I taking you around the horn in MLB. We're going to talk some NFL draft a little bit later, but I want to focus on George's article that he writes each and every week. He writes two articles each and every week. You got Who's Hot and Who's Not. That comes out on Fridays. The Closer Report comes out every Tuesday. First of all, give me a slight preview. We're going to focus on your Who's Hot, Who's Not. We didn't get a chance to get to it yesterday, but any previews of what we got going on in the Closer Report? Obviously, this Angel situation is a disaster right now. Anything else that's any big movement that you need to figure out before Tuesday?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say the Angel situation's a disaster. It's more of annoying. You finally get your wish there, and then it just blows up.
I guess it's true. It's only a 10-day DL for Bedrosian, right?
Yeah, I think most of the things are light. We think Zach Britton will be back at some point this week. So Brad Brock, if you own him, probably not going to help you out all that much longer there. K-Rod, I think he's okay. Astros are playing some games with Ken Giles. Right, we've seen it a couple times now in the eighth inning. Then he comes back and closes the next day. Are they just going with the committee there? Whoever they believe is the best guy that night to close the game out, the best matchup there? Something you may want to watch there. It doesn't look like it's written in stone that it's going to be. Mr. Giles, or, you know, where it's his job and his job alone. We see it familiar for the Mets struggle this week, and the Mets were sort of coy about installing him full-time as soon as he comes back, but that's going to happen sooner rather than later. Not all that worried about him. Hector Neris is still a guy I think you want in Philadelphia, but they won't name him the full-time closer, which means they still want to keep Benoit somewhat in the mix. I don't think there's any doubt that Neris is the better closer, but they're playing some games there as well, which, once again, is frustrating to no end. Matt Bush is the closer in Texas, although he hasn't had a chance to close out a game yet, although he did have the win yesterday. And Washington's pretty much a mess, too. Trainin, Kelly, Glover, they could all get some saves here. I think the guy you want is Kelly, but since they can't go multiple games, I think, once again, if you're in deeper leagues and every save counts here, you want to go out and get Glover as well.
Didn't Kelly get the save on Friday night and Glover got the save last night?
Yeah, the problem is they don't think Kelly can go multiple days. At least not. He can't go 2 days on, 1 day off, 2 days on. You know, I think they feel at most, in a perfect situation, the most he can do is 3 days a week. Maybe four. You know, so I think that's the problem. That's why they won't install him as the full-time, no-doubt closer because of that reason.
Got it. So a little preview of what's going on today on the station. We got Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony Cicada and Cha-Cha. That's coming up. We're going to have, I believe, Fan Rag, Fantasy Baseball, Al Melchior after that. And then the producers, Pete Considori, will be on the producers today from 1 to 3. Isn't that right, Pete? What do you guys got going on today other than NHL playoffs, which I know you're excited to talk about?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of NHL playoffs. A couple of news stories from around the league. Around sports. And then also, we also do a little spot where Chris talks about the fantasy movie league that he's in. So we'll be talking about how he did these past couple of weeks.
It's actually kind of interesting. So what do you get points for how well things are doing in the box office?
Correct. Yeah. So however much money a movie makes in a particular showing or that week in the box office is how much money you gain in a total. So I guess whoever has the most money at the end wins. So he's a few weeks in. I want to say he's about 4 or 5 weeks into the Fantasy Movie League. I think he started once the show started. So it's been
interesting. There's got to be some limit. Is there like a draft of some sort? Like, can you all own Beauty and the Beast,
It's like DFS. You only have a certain number of showings or a certain amount of money to spend to get a specific showing of a specific movie in your fantasy theater or fantasy movie theater. So it's kind of like that.
George, would you be interested in something like that? You're a movie guy.
I am a movie guy, but no. There aren't too many good movies. There aren't too many movies nowadays that you care about. I mean, I think Hollywood's lost any kind of creativity. You know, it's all remakes and superhero movies. Da, da, da. It's been there, done that. There's just no Beverly Hills Cop anymore.
We talked a bunch about Beverly Hills Cop, and all three of us, Mike, myself, Matt Modica, and George Kurtz, were all texting last night that we should really try to find Beverly Hills Cop and get in a viewing of that.
I have the DVD. I can watch it whenever I like.
There you go. Yeah, I got trounced yesterday in my poll. I said it was an action movie, but it came out that it was a comedy by like 3-1 vote. I would also state that we have a poll currently up on Fantasy Sports Radio, so go hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. And the poll is thus. It is, what did you watch yesterday? I just want to kind of get a sense of what people are watching. MLB games, NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, or all of the above? Mine is all of the above. I would imagine a lot of people listening in. Wow, NBA playoffs, the early edge. So it's pretty evenly split early. We'll update you on that as we go through the rest of the show. But, George, turning a page back to your article, the who's not, who's not. You said it's easy to put Starling Marte on the who's not list, but that's too obvious. You want to make sure that we have some diversity here and players that aren't so completely obvious. I joked yesterday that you had Jose Bautista on the who's not list, and he promptly hit a home run. But he came back yesterday, backed you up, going 0-for-4 yesterday. Bautista is ice cold. He's 8-for-65 in the season, hitting .123. If you look at his game log, there's tons of zeros up there. He's currently sitting with 8 runs scored and 1 homer. It's his first home run of the season. It is the only one he hit, with 4 RBIs and hitting .123. So he's about as cold as it gets, but I would imagine a player of this caliber, even though he's on the backside of his career and his average has been a killer, you have to expect him to turn it around at some point, at least on the power side of things.
Yeah, I think that's what you're really hoping for right now. I don't think the average is ever coming back. All right, by that I mean to what it was at one point in his career. I think you're hoping right now that he can hit you, 25, 30 home runs and bat .230. I think you would take that right now, be a all or nothing kind of guy, because right now he looks awful. Listen, he was out there freelancing. Nobody wanted him. Let you know that scout saw this, GM saw this. That he's losing his skills. He gets hurt as well. He's still playing the outfield there for Toronto, so he may not be healthy for the full season. So, bottom line is this: what are you going to do? You own him right now. You can't trade him unless you're going to take 50 cents on a dollar. There might be somebody who grabbed him there just because they need power and will take a chance and can stash him on their bench for now, which is where you should be stashing until he figures it out. What are you going to release him? You could do that. I don't know what else is there on your waiver wire. What else are you going to put there in your starting lineup? But what if he does start to hit? What if it is just a 3-week slow starter here? I don't think this is necessarily a 3-week thing. I think this is Bautista's declining skills. I think he will hit more home runs, sure. I don't think he's going to be this bad all season long, but I don't think he's going to be the biggest asset to your fantasy team either.
Yeah, I had to play him yesterday because of the Hunter Pence situation, and I was my situation with the kids, and I was sort of wrapped up with little kids, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen with Kiermaier. He left the game Friday night with an illness, so when I did the lineup early in the morning, I was like, well, I'm not sure if he's going to play. I'll put him on the bench for now, and I'll switch it out later if I can. I just didn't have a chance to do it, so I took an offer with Bautista and Kiermaier. I actually think he went 0-for-3 yesterday, so it doesn't matter. 6-1, half dozen the other there. But
I'd have gone with Bautista anyway. He hit the home run. You got a lot of home run hitters are streaky. You got to figure once they get one, maybe he's figured something out. But my other worry is that maybe he just ran into one Friday night, and it's not the beginning of something good.
Well, that'd be terrible. So because it can't get any worse than it is right now. So going through I will continue on the who's not side of things. Jeff Samardzija. He's currently 0-3 with a 6.16 ERA, George. He's got 24 strikeouts in 19 innings, but this is no bueno. You said in the article, we have a lot of love for him, but he's only had an ERA below 3.75 twice. He's only struck out more than 200 batters in a season twice, and he's only won more than 10 games in a season twice. So while we love the guy because he's big and he throws fairly hard, his numbers aren't consistently anywhere near towards elite.
No, they're not, and I didn't realize that until I looked at Samardzija. He's just, I don't know why we always like him. So not that we like him as an ace. I'm not saying he was an SP1 or even an SP2, but somewhere after that, SP3, SP4, that's where he is, and people expect things out of him. He went to San Fran, maybe we expect more out of him. Maybe because he was a former football player for Notre Dame. Maybe that's why we like him so much. But you look at his overall numbers, even his best years, he's never won more than 12 games in a season. I understand wins aren't what they used to be. It's hard to chase wins. Not all his fault. Still, he's never won more than 12. and he's only won more than nine twice. Think about that. More than nine games twice. It tells you something that maybe he doesn't go deep enough in the games to get these wins here. So that's a problem here. His ERA has never been below, what, 3.75? Only twice, and has been below that since 2014. You know, just because he pitched in that the Grand Canyon in San Fran, his ERA right now is 6.16. His whip is 1.42. No, thank you. He sits. I think he still could be somewhat useful for a fantasy team, but he's a back of the I can't call it a rotation either. Scott gets mad about that, too, because you don't rotate in fantasy. Back of your staff starter.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. Does he throw today, actually? We'll take a look at the pitching probables coming up, but it looks like he might be up for soon enough. He will be throwing. Last time he pitched was last Sunday. So we'll take a look at that as we move forward. Another player on the Who's Not list, Keon Broxton. As you say here, when it comes to fantasy players in the month of April, I almost always preach patience. The problem is I reserve patience for players who have a track record, something Broxton does not. Hitting 119 with a 196 OBP, you'd have to wonder if it's just a matter of time if he gets sent back down to AAA. So your thoughts on Keon Broxton?
It's tougher to a younger player. Because like, there is no track record, so there's no back of the baseball card to look at. You don't know what he's going to do. Is he always a slow starter? Is it just this year? What's going on here? Is the pressure getting to him? Because once again, if you're a young player, a rookie, you want to establish yourself as a major league regular. Get that money. Get that big contract eventually. You know, so there's a lot of pressure here. Now, if he was on a good team, a team that was a contending team, there would be even more worries. Oh, he's going to get set down any day. Now, they're trying to win games, so they can't afford to keep going with him. But he's not. You know, he's on a team that readily admits they're in a rebuilding mode, so they can afford to be to wait and be patient here if they want. You know, let him learn at the major league level. We don't know what they're going to do here. Bottom line, those numbers are terrible. You know, they've got to come up. I think he did have a hit last night. And that's you know, it's not good when we're talking about one hit and we're happy for you. You know,
yeah, he broke an 0-for-18 slump or something like that.
Yeah, it's just not pretty right now. I think Milwaukee will be patient for another week, maybe 2 weeks. If he doesn't turn it around, then I do expect him to get sent down.
Yeah, and there's a ton of strikeouts in there too, George. He struck out 22 times. I think Matt Modica was talking, or Chris Vaccaro, one of our friends on Twitter, had the key on Broxton with several Ks in front of it to emphasize how poorly he's been hitting. I mean, the strikeouts are ample. Just in the last week, to give you a sense of things, since April 14th, three strikeout game, struck out again last night. So struggling in one sense, yes. As you said, he's hitting 119. He picked up a couple of hits on this weekend, but the strikeouts continue. So hopefully he can figure out a way to turn around. You never want to see a young player like that struggle in that regard. Another player we had a lot of expectations for this season is Carlos Martinez. He had the awesome start on opening night. It's all gone downhill since. In the 15 and a third innings pitched, he's allowed 12 earned runs, 17 hits, and 11 walks. Tons of walks there, George. He still has 21 Ks during those subsequent three starts, but he can't get it together, walking tons of people.
Yeah, this one's strange. I mean, it really is strange. And those starts didn't come against the greatest of teams. They did play the Yankees in New York, but in that game, it was one of the weirdest games. He either struck the batter out or walked him. I think the first something like 10 batters were like that. It was just weird. He's right now, for whatever reason, he's lost control of his own. Is it mechanical? He's still throwing the ball hard, mid-90s. So it's not an arm issue here. I think it's a guy you have to ride out. What are you going to do? Once again, you're not trading him, you're not releasing him. He's a guy I banked on. I got him in a couple of leagues here. I expected, I don't want to say a Cy Young season, because I don't have him up there with Kershaw, Scherzer, or the aforementioned Bumgarner, or Syndergaard for that matter. But he's right there in the next level. Yeah, you know, so I'm surprised. I'm disappointed as an owner of that. For whatever reason, this is going on here. But once again, I'm more looking at it as just a slump. For whatever reason, things aren't working out, that he'll figure it out sooner or later. He'll get it turned around. He'll be fine. But that being said, he's killing my whip right now, killing it. So if I think he has a one start next week, he'll be on my bench now. I need to see him pitch a good game.
Last guy in the Who's Not things. We'll do the Who's Hot after the break, but Dansby Swanson is a player that you and I both like as a player. You are on record, and I concur with you that he's a guy that we expect to be a really good MLB player. But for him to be a fantasy star is probably overstating it, and expectations for him to be that this year were probably too aggressive. You're saying he's could be in like the 15-15 range with the plus average. Right now, it's all bad news. He's hitting 132. He only got one homer on the season. Stolen bases, he's only got he's got none on the season. So no numbers to really talk about from Dansby Swanson. And you think he's a candidate for release in a redraft league?
Yeah, I put him on this list, Mike, because, for anybody who doesn't know, I answer a ton of questions in the RotoExpress email answer queue, and I saw this from more than one person. They were listing slow-starting players on their fantasy team, but who are their studs. You know, and both guys included Swanson. Swanson's not a fantasy stud. He was not going into draft season. If you draft him thinking he's a stud, then you sort of bought into the hype. All right? And what I mean by that is nobody, no rankings had him in the top 10 position. He's going to be a better MLB player than he will a fantasy one. Okay, so he's just not that kind of player, and you got to be careful here. You know, Swanson, I mentioned what he could do, the 15-15. That's if everything goes well. And I don't know if it will. I think the average will rebound some. He is a good hitter, but the power is limited. Speed, he has speed, but not immense speed. You know, he's not Billy Hamilton or D. Gordon speed. He's going to steal 50, 60 bases. He's not. Even in his best teams, it may only be around 20. I think best case scenario, you're looking at a Derek Jeter type of player. A better MLB one than fantasy one, but one as a middle infield, if you can reach that 15-15 or even 10-15 with a 300 average, that's good for you. But that's not going to happen this season. That may be a year or two down the line. And once again, he hasn't even played a full year in the majors yet. Patience is going to be required here. You should not have been counting on him to carry your team.
Yeah, I should know that he had a double and a run scored last night, but it does not necessarily indicate that he's broken out of a pretty bad slump over the course of this month. So I would say that you can find George's article, is Who's Not, Who's Not, Who's Hot, Who's Not, every Friday on rotoexperts.com in the exclusive Edge In-Season Fantasy Baseball Package. It's your ultimate bench coach for the 2017 season. So stay ahead of the pack with our in-depth statistical breakdowns, trend analysis, and player insights. Become a waiver wizard and learn how to scan the numbers like a roto scientist. We'll help you set ideal lineups every week, and this season you get a built-in fantasy training staff with our new injury advisor powered by InsideInjuries.com. So get the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge In-Season Fantasy Baseball Package now and start soaring to the top of the standings. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount. We'll talk about the players who are hot, might be candidates for pickup in your leagues after this with George. Back. I don't know what this is. It's the weirdest music I've ever heard.
Did you ever watch Buck Rogers, Mike, back in the 70s?
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Right, this is what this is like. Little tech, I guess, yeah. Techno, whatever they call it there. That's what this reminds me of.
So weird.
Little Gil Gerard, like Aaron Gray in that nice little painted on suit.
Yeah, it could go like a little Battlestar Galactica, you know, Buck Rogers in the 24th century or whatever.
25th.
What's the name of it?
25th century,
sorry.
I just like Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I watched both of those shows. Aaron Gray was like she was a rite of passage, I think, for men of our age, George. She was she had it going on.
She was like the good girl, right? The girl, she was hot, obviously hot as all hell, but the good girl, where Princess Ardala was the bad girl, equally as hot, if not hotter, but more the bad girl type. If you went for that.
You already know more about Buck Rogers than I do, because I couldn't have named that other one. I think I only remember Aaron Gray from that, for obvious reasons. But in any event,
well, what's her name?
I'll have to go back and watch some of the old shows.
Revealing outfits.
Got it.
I think every show she was in some kind of. It wasn't a. They wouldn't call it a bikini. It was like some kind of princess dress, but it was a bikini.
Call me motivated. I'll search it down on the cable and see if I can find it. I'm sure they're running reruns somewhere on Sci-Fi or wherever.
But you know what gets you
sad?
I'm not gonna let this go. You know, when you look at something like that, you look at a show from the 70s or 80s, and you realize, oh my God, they're like 70 years old now.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, dude. I mean, we're in our 40s. Nobody's getting any younger, so I don't really have a problem admitting that. Like, I think if you said it to somebody that's in their 20s now, I'd be like, this 70-year-old used to be super hot. They're going to think you're weird, but you're just talking about your childhood, and they're going to go through the same thing when, I'll pick a name out of a hat. Jennifer Lawrence is going to be 70 years old someday. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have to deal with the same thing. So that's the only young star I could think of.
I don't know what she looks like.
Is that a reasonable? Pete, you're a lot younger than me. Is that a reasonable person to pick right there?
I think it is. I think it was a good pick.
Yeah, so there you go.
Pete has no idea who Erin Gray and Pamela Hemsley even are.
No, absolutely not.
I actually don't even know who Pamela Hemsley is. I don't know
did you watch Matt Houston?
No, I don't know. Is that a show?
Matt Houston? No, it was a show back in the 80s. Lee Horsley, the gazillionaire private detective?
Nope.
No.
I missed that one.
Yeah, that's the only two shows.
I used to watch shows back then, too. I know I don't watch shows now, but I used to. You have kind of an encyclopedic knowledge, though, of 80s television, I think. We've gone through this before, and you're always pulling out references.
I'm much better at 80s. I lost it after the 90s. I stopped. I don't watch much regular TV now.
A friend of a friend of mine did a. He created an 80s trivia game, and it like took off. Got picked up by one of these companies, and it took off and sold a whole bunch. But you'd probably be pretty good at that. I think you and I combined would be pretty good on various pop culture references in the 80s.
As long as it's the 80s, I'd be good. I'm good with the music, good with the TV show. I have a lot of DVDs.
Did you turn it off like in the 90s, like once the calendar flipped over to 1990?
Not on purpose. I think all the music sounded the same. No one came up with any new ideas anymore. I just started to lose interest. Even TV was the same thing. Even though I'll fully admit, TV shows are better nowadays. You know, they're better made. It's a better stories. I mean, 24, I thought it was a great show. The Shield with Michael Chiklis, fantastic. Sons of Anarchy, you know, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, go on and on. Justified, they're all cable shows too, by the way. You know, I thought all great shows. But on a whole, I tend to only watch TV now while I'm working, you know, I'm writing a column, because it's background fodder. You know, just something that's there. You know, music, all the music, I mean, 99% of the music I listen to is all classic rock, you know, The Who, Stones, Genesis, Zep, Queen, whatever it might be, Weird Al. Billy Joel, Live on Long Island, that's like contractually, that's on my birth certificate, I have to listen to Billy Joel. And that's, you know, so I did lose interest, once the 90s came. I think it all sounded the same with TV shows, even movies. It's very few new plot lines where, you know, something you haven't heard before. Everything's just regurgitated, recycled,
But the 90s the 90s were an excellent era for movies.
Yeah, the movies-wise, I'd probably agree with you. I guess in the 2000s is when I really started. And I love movies. I said, a friend of mine owns a movie theater. I can go in for free whenever I want. My niece, who's here with me today, actually works at that movie theater. You know, so she gets me in, I get free food, and I'll probably get fired now.
What's a recent movie that you saw that you really liked?
The last movie I saw was probably Star Wars, right?
I still didn't see that. I gotta go see it.
You still haven't seen that? You know, listen, I think we took away your privileges last night. They're gone. We were thinking about taking away, because you said Beverly Hills Cop 2 in this text between Matt Modica, yourself, and I was almost as good as Beverly Hills Cop 1. You lost your privileges.
No, I said it's over the top. I said it's too over the top, but it's a good movie. It's entertaining. The first one is better, but the second one is entertaining. Bridget Nielsen, right? Isn't that the Bridget Nielsen one?
Yeah. You're not helping yourself here.
What? I'm just saying.
It was terrible. Terrible. Terrible.
Oh, come on.
Terrible.
I didn't say Beverly
Bridget
Hills
Nielsen
Cop
being
3.
In it alone makes it terrible.
Well, back then, she had something going on.
So. I didn't say she didn't have something going on. I just said as an actress.
I'm just saying.
I
wasn't grading her acting chops at the time.
Was she in...
To be honest, I was probably 15.
Was she in Rocky IV, too? Was she Drago's... wife?
Yes.
She looked like she could kill somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I'd want to meet her in a dark alley either.
I don't think things went too well for her after Rocky IV.
No, I don't remember her at all.
Beverly Hills Cop 2. I don't know which one came out.
Did she date Gastineau, too?
Yes.
She did, right? Yeah.
And Flavor Flav.
I didn't know that, so she has some interesting choices.
She was on like a reality show a couple of years ago. That's the only reason I know it. So we made our way around 80s movies. So we'll do. I here's what I'll promise. next week, I'll come prepared, and we'll do an 80s trivia segment with George just to see how good he is. You know, I don't know what it's going to be contained in there, whether it's movies, shows.
If it's action shows, I'll do well. If it's you know, like Family Ties or the Cosby Show, it's not good. It won't be pretty. I didn't watch
I used to love Family Ties. All right, so let's talk who's hot, George. We talked Luis Severino a bunch yesterday, so we don't have to go over that. He's piling up a lot of strikeouts. ERA is a little bit high, but Luis Severino, a really good candidate for pickup in a lot of leagues, right?
I'm sorry, I'm looking at the eye candy at the on the buffet line right about now. Yeah, Luis Severino. Listen, it's the talent today is actually not bad. I feel like Corey Parson now.
Yeah, that's why you can't. That's why you can't sit in that seat in the studio because it distracts you.
Yeah, well, then I blame you. I sit in the other seat anyway. So either way, I'd be staring at it. But there's like four or five here. I'm not even worried about not getting my bacon anymore.
Well, I'm bummed that I didn't get a chance to be in studio today. So
there you go. Anyway, Luis Severino.
Luis Severino.
Yes, we talked about him yesterday. With Severino, it's all about developing that third pitch, and not only developing, but having confidence to throw it. You know, he has a changeup, but he doesn't always want to throw it. So Romine and Sanchez have made a conscious effort to force him. Those are the Yankee catchers to force him to throw the ball because they need to keep hitters off his fastball, off his slider. So that's been an issue there. He's pitching well this year. He's got a 27-2 strikeout to walk ratio. I understand the ERA is over 4, but Yankee defense has contributed to that quite a bit. Cosmo had an error on Wednesday that cost him 50 runs. He caught the popped up bump, but if he lets it drop, he gets a triple play. That's something you have to know. It's something you have to tell yourself before the play starts. Hey, this guy pops up the bunt. No one's running. I'm going to let the ball drop. There's no infield fly rule on a popped up bunt. So, better defense would have helped him out there considerably. I'm not saying he's going to be great, Mike. He's going to be an SP1, SP2, probably not even an SP3, but he's usable again. This is a guy who has talent, throws hard, throws in the upper 90s, throws hard. If he can ever develop that consistent changeup where he's not afraid to throw it, keep batters off balance, he's going to be very usable because the strikeouts are going to be there.
Right. So moving on, Ryan Zimmerman of the Nationals. Wasn't that long ago that he was a mainstay in your fantasy lineup. Someone you could count on for 25-plus homers and an average of about 290. So he's been banged up a lot in recent years, but off to a really good start. 389, 5 homers, 13 RBIs. So your thoughts really on Ryan Zimmerman? Feel like somebody that you can count on, or you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop when he cools off? He's not going to hit 389. We know that.
I'm waiting for two other shoes to drop. I don't think he's going to hit this well the rest of the season, so I'm worried about that. Second would be
struck out 3 times last night.
That's against the Grom. You know, I'm going to give him. I'm going to give a break there. But the second thing I would worry about, he gets hurt a lot too. Yeah, you know, when does that injury happen? You know, so I might worry about that a bit here. But he's a guy, hey, he was probably drafted maybe as a reserve, but a corner infielder right now, you plug him in. If you're looking for someone to replace Miguel Cabrera, he's out there on your waiver wire. Well, you got a gift. He's hitting well, and you may only need him for 10 days, 2 weeks. So you go out and grab him.
Good stuff there. Steven Souza, Tampa Bay Rays. The speed never really materialized. People thought he might be power speed guy, but while the speed never materialized, the power is legit. And you're saying he has 30 home run power if he can start 140 games. He's currently hitting 349. We obviously expect that to go down, but Steven Souza, guy that might get you 30 homers this year, George, if he can stay in that lineup.
If he can stay in that, that's the key question. Can he stay in the lineup? And once again, whenever we say stay in the lineup, I don't think anyone's looking for 162 anymore. It's just not done in this day and age. If everyone's going to get their days off, I look for 140 plus. You know, that's not going to get. Can he play 140 plus? If he can, 25 home runs, I think it'll come. The power is legit. The problem with Souza is he doesn't run as much as we thought he might. At one point, we thought he could be a 20-20 player, but with an average, that wouldn't be great. So now I think we're looking at more 25-10, but same thing, the average still is going to come down. He's hitting well right now, so it's great. You know, somebody who's on your waiver wire can certainly do some damage for you. You plug him in there. I can't say that the power is legit. Even in Tampa Bay, certainly not a home run hitter's haven, the power is legit. It'll play there. He's not going to hit 40, but 25 to 30 wouldn't shock me at all if they just leave him in the lineup day in, day out.
Moving on to Avisail Garcia, another player that fantasy owners have been waiting for in the power department. He's never actually hit more than 13 homers in a season, but he's only 26. Maybe he's finally bringing it together. He's had a couple of really good games recently. You think this is the year he can finally hit 25 homers, George?
I wonder, you know, I put the age in there because he's only 26 years old. And not everyone figures it out at 23, 24. Some plays it takes a couple of years to see major league pitching to really figure out what pitcher's trying to do to you, figure out how to attack them, all that sort of stuff. He plays in a bandbox in Chicago, right? Good hitter's ballpark that we know to, he should be able to do damage there. So we like that. My only question is this. What happens if they do trade everybody? I know Quintana and Robertson really don't affect them, but what if Abreu goes too? He'd be the only threat in that lineup. You know, Frazier's going to get dealt. So if team's going to really pitch around him. But I do think he'll set his career high in home runs this year. Can he reach 25? I think that's the upper level plateau if everything goes well there. But 20-plus, I think, could be certainly in the cards here. Once again, they don't have much going on there in Chicago. Their farm system is better. You know, so I guess he could be pushed a little bit if he's not hitting. But the next person we expect to be called up from the White Sox system would be Moncada, and I don't see him playing the outfield.
Yeah, he's in a little bit of a slump right now, for his last 8 or 9, I believe. But still, Garcia, 3 homers on the season. Jay Bruce, the last guy you have on this list, quickly proving 2 things during the first 3 weeks of the season. 1, that his power wasn't all because of playing in that bandbox they call a ballpark in Cincinnati. 2, that he can indeed play in New York, and his slump at the end of last season might be because of not people of his routine. He's not scared to play in the big city. Bruce, because of various injuries, is going to be in this lineup every day, George, regardless of where he's playing in the field.
Yeah, the Mets are a mash unit right now. I mean, they really are. Everyone's hurt on that team. I'm a Yankee fan. Don't care. Sucks for the Mets. But that being said, you know, when someone gets traded to New York, you always wonder. I mean, Mike, you and I are old enough once again to remember Ed Whitson. Fell apart what's being traded here. And he may be the most, the best name we know, but there have been other players too. Once they get here in New York, they don't perform well. So you always worry about that. And Bruce didn't perform well last year and when he got traded to the Mets. He was having an MVP season with Cincinnati.
Jason Bay was a guy for the Mets who fell apart once he got here.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. Like I said, Bruce was having an MVP season last year. He would have won the award because Cincinnati was terrible. But he was having an MVP season, gets traded here and pretty much does nothing. So you have to wonder, you know, was it because of New York? Was it because he got traded? You know, Bruce in an interview admits he's a routine-oriented guy, and when his routine got disrupted, he had trouble adjusting. So he admits that well. He's back on routine. Now, actually, living in the city, which to me is always a good. If you see a player living in the city, it means he's sort of embracing it. He's not afraid of it then. You know, so I think that's always a good sign, too. So, yes, Bruce, I believe in. I think the Mets still might look to move him at some point during the season, only because they have to move somebody there. You know, Conforto needs to play. I know we're going to – I don't want to beat Conforto to death again, but Conforto needs to play every day. Cespedes needs to play every day. So there really is one spot between Granderson and Bruce, and well, I guess 2 spots when I include Duda for center field and first base. So that, you know, something needs to fall there, and you wonder what if eventually it could be Bruce, because if he keeps hitting, then he will have value again on the trade market.
Yeah. So we'll hit a break right here. I'm going to explore something that George said about players coming into their own a little bit later. Avisel Garcia, 26, maybe he's finally figuring it out. It's been an interesting thing that I've thought about over the last couple of years. I'll float the idea to you folks in the next break. I'd love to hear you chime in on Twitter. You hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio or give us a call at 844-843-6879. Have we seen the prime years, and I put that in quotes, of MLB player shift downwards? We saw a very young team with the Cubs. We'll explore that, talk a little bit more about it, and how players are coming into their prime and exactly when that can happen. Mike and George back after this. Back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can take the world's premier 24/7 Fantasy Sports Radio Network with you wherever you go. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio app now in the iTunes Store on Google Play, and listen for free anytime, anywhere. You can hear Tony Zancada, myself and George, Benny Riccardi, Greg Sussman, Scott Engel, or Jake Seeley, and a lot more, Corey Parson. We keep you updated and informed wherever you go. Get the Fantasy Sports Radio app for free right now in the iTunes Store on Google Play and take the experts with you. You're going to listen to us, hopefully, live today. You're listening on the app. You got Tony Zancada and Cha-Cha next with Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. That's from 10 to 12. You're going to have Al Melchior with FanRag Fantasy Baseball. That's 12 to 1. And the producers are Pete Considori and Chris Bavona from 1 to 3. So a full slate. Put the app on your phone. I'll tell you it's the best way to listen. If you want, if you're at work, you're in front of a laptop, fine. Throw it up on the PC, but get it on your phone. Listen anytime, anywhere. You can listen live and on demand. So, George, the thing that I wanted to explore, and it's a discussion that I had with a couple of good friends of mine that are big baseball fans like me. We go to the Yankee games together. It's been historically thought that a MLB baseball player's prime is what, 27 to 32?
Yeah, I would say that's accurate.
Yeah, so that's typically the numbers that you hear. And after 32, you see a decline. And as they approach 27, they start to produce bigger numbers. But if you look at last year, for example, and I know it's just 1 year, and people might say it's not statistically relevant, but it had me thinking about it a lot last year. And you sparked this thought in my head when you talked about Avisel Garcia being 26 and trying to figure it out. What's interesting to me is that we have so many good young players now. And I'm not saying that wasn't always the case, but I'm saying that the most dominant players in the league and the guys that were competing for the MVP last year were all before their traditional prime years. Trout, Betts, Altuve was 26 at the time. Machado, granted Donaldson was in there, but I'm just trying to, you know, paint a picture here. Chris Bryant won the MVP. Daniel Murphy was in second, but Corey Seager, Anthony Rizzo, Nolan Arenado, Freddie Freeman, tons of guys that are younger players. Bryce Harper had a bad year last year because we think it's due to injury. He's obviously one of the best players in the entire league. Some might consider him the best. Paul Goldschmidt is a little bit older, but clearly I just rattled off a whole bunch of players. And I'm just trying to implore to you that I wonder if that needs to be adjusted. Maybe it's because players are getting started sooner. Maybe it's because, you know, we're outside of an era where PEDs are being used and those players that are over 30 or past their prime. I'm just trying to get a sense of it because last year was very stark in how many young players were so productive, not to mention that the Cubs and the Indians were two of the youngest teams. I think the Cubs were the youngest team in MLB, and they're able to get all this done. So I present that to you, your thoughts.
I think you have a point. I think it's going to start to be younger and younger. But for that to happen, though, it means they got to be started younger and younger, which is something baseball traditionally has not wanted to do. This is not hockey where you start playing at 19 or football where you play right out of college at 22, 23. You know, sometimes you don't even make it to the majors until 23, 24, 25. You know, you could spend a lot of years in the minors until they think you figured it out. You know, and we all know with pitchers nowadays how they baby their arms. It can take you longer to build up enough arm strength for them to figure that you're ready to start here. So that's the thing that has to be fixed. I think in a perfect world, sure. I think the arbitration system also throws this off. How many times do we see teams holding back a player a year or a month because they want to hold down their salary so they don't reach the Super 2 or so they don't hold back a year from arbitration, keep them an extra year? We see this over and over again. I think that plays a part in it as well. So I think that's my issue there. I also wonder if, you know, we said 27 to 32 is the sweet spot, I guess you want to put it. Well, you know, it didn't mean that at 32 they fell off a cliff. They were still useful from 32, yeah, even up to 38, but now steroids is less than that, right? We've gotten, for the most part, we believe we've taken steroids out. And so now, really, you start to decline now by 33, 34, where it's going to be pretty obvious. This is why, you know, back when Cano was a free agent, no one wanted to give him that big contract because, hey, you know, the last 6 years, the Mariners might eat that. I mean, he's just not going to be anywhere near the same player. Pujols is sort of seeing that now. You know, these big contracts of players, as they get older, and that start of a steroid age is not good. Just look at A-Rod. You know, so I think that plays a part in it as well. So maybe that does come down to a little bit where it has to be. I don't think it's going to come down massively, but maybe now it's 26 to 30 rather than 27 to 32. I think teams will continue to adjust. We see it in football, don't we, Mike? A lot of the young teams now, maybe it's because of the salary cap and stuff like that, but these older players aren't in the league anymore. The league is young. They're forcing these younger players to come right out of college, especially quarterbacks, come right out and perform. You got a year, maybe two. You can't figure it out in a year or two, then we don't think you're going to have it. You're done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a big part of this, that was a point that I think is well taken, in that there's a financial component to this on both sides. When we're talking about the NFL, I think people have to understand that, and the players haven't really fought for it, so it's their own fault, but a somewhat unintended consequence of the NFL, and part of the reason why, if I'm telling you that football isn't as good as it was 10, 20 years ago, and I do believe that, by the way. I believe it's not as fun to watch, and it's not because I'm old school and I need to see big hits and guys getting knocked out. I'm not a Neanderthal. I'm telling you that there are less experienced players playing every week that would have normally played 10 to 20 years ago. Just a very basic example, if you have a first or second year tight end and you are making roster decisions towards the end of training camp and he is battling with your 8 year tight end who is a better blocker, has more experience, would probably be better in most situations, that guy's getting cut because he's a couple of $100,000 more than the younger guy every time. George, every time,
yeah.
Unless there's a real talent gap. So by that logic, it is one example of why the NFL is a little bit tougher to watch these days and why every coach and every GM will bitch about how poor offensive line play is. It's mainly because there's a lot of inexperienced guys in there. Guys don't hang around for 15 years in the NFL. It's really rare now. You get 8 or 9 years in there, that's a great veteran career, and you're out of there. Injuries obviously play a role there, but finances, guys get forced out of the game. They're like, you know what? We're just going to go with the younger guy. He's a little bit cheaper. We need to give our quarterback a few hundred. And we need to give our quarterback an extra million, and we're going to cut a few guys here towards the end of the roster and go with the inexperienced guys. That's typically the way it goes in the NFL, yes?
It is. I think that's exactly the way it goes in the NFL. I mean, we've heard about this over and over again. The cap sort of penalizes the veteran.
Yeah, it does. But on the MLB side, I think the counterpoint and something that you brought up is the arbitration system. It's the teams trying to save a little bit of money or hang on to the player longer, more to the point. They're trying to hang on to him for as long as they can. We talked a little bit about the mess of Dileen Betances' arbitration hearing and how it puts GMs and teams in a position to denigrate their own player. And maybe this plays a role here. You know, MLB doesn't have a cap, and the owners know they're going to have to pay up for superstars. So they're keeping the guys back, keeping them in the minors. They know they're a year further away from breaking the bank on player X.
It also hurts in baseball. I mean, you just know if you got a Scott Boras client, he ain't signing with you. So now you even want to more make sure you keep him the extra year. Right, Boras, that's what I think Chris Bryant's a Boras client. And you know he's taking Bryant to free agency, and by that I mean probably not re-signing with the Cubs. You know, so you have no chance to sign him, really, no chance, and there certainly won't be any kind of discount. You know, so that plays into this as well. If a guy's a Boras client from day one, early on, then you know they're going to keep him back and hold him back that extra year so they get that extra year of service. Listen, I get it business-wise, but it hurts your product on the field. And we've seen this over the years where calling up a player after the Super 2 deadline, which is generally late May, early June, sometimes it could be early. It depends on several different factors. But we've seen it before where waiting for so long has cost team a playoff spot. I believe it was the Giants when they wouldn't call up Buster Posey, who ended up missing the playoffs by one game that year. Tampa Bay had the same situation either before that or after that. So it does happen where business has taken priority over on the field, and it's caused a team a playoff spot.
Yeah, no doubt. So, you know, it's something that I think is kind of an interesting topic because we talk so much about players' primes and he's coming into his prime. But I thought last year, and granted, it could be even a little bit of an anomaly, there were so many young players producing, and the Cubs were so young, I thought to myself, why does everybody keep saying this in 27 to 32? Like, maybe we need to change the paradigm a little bit or shift it down. Like you said, it doesn't have to be dramatic. Maybe the player's prime we see over the next 10 years is really 25 to 30, whatever it might be. And again, it doesn't mean that they explode onto the scene at their 25th birthday and drop off a cliff at age 30 in a day. But, you know, it's just something I think is an interesting topic and something we can continue to track over time. You know, see how many players that are under 25 or 26 are in the MVP voting, whatever it might be. So, and there was a lot last year, frankly. So just an interesting topic. You know, we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more, go around the horn with MLB. I want to get to the draft. I'll tell you about what we're going to be doing for the draft, or at least me personally, after the break. Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and George back. This sounds like the Flaming Lips. this song.
No idea.
To me. Yeah, so
I'm still watching the people eating bacon, you know, pancakes, eggs. So I got my niece here with me. She's got some vegan pizza thing she's eating, trying to convince me that it's good. She's a vegan. It's gross. But literally, I mean,
choice, George.
I know it's a choice, but she always tries to convince me that it's good. Oh, yeah, the vegan pizza's good. Yeah. The vegan ice cream bar is good. Yeah, sure it is.
Well, that's got to be pretty gross.
That is pretty gross.
I had full ice cream, non-vegan ice cream last night, and it was delicious. So I don't think they
I'd like to have non-vegan ice cream.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So
I had ice steak.
My wife's a dietitian. I think I've told you that before. Yeah, so it's
so you get screwed there too.
A little bit, but she doesn't, like, we don't eat vegan or gluten-free or any of that kind of stuff. It doesn't, she doesn't aspire to that necessarily. We eat healthy, but she's not out of control with that kind of stuff. I think she does on occasion, though, eat, like, I think she had to eat, like, dairy-free pizza for a period of time.
Yeah.
Like, when the kids are first born.
And my niece is nodding her head. Yeah, nasty. Yeah, that's good. Good. That's what you should eat. Yeah, get the hell out of here.
Pretty nasty.
My wife's a nurse, right? So my wife makes us all, when I say make us, I mean makes the kids, because I won't do it. But she makes them drink, like, apple cider vinegar with garlic and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know what this is? It's huge on this. The kids are all crying and they're in tears. And I'm like, just leave me alone. But then again, I've been sick for a month. I guess maybe she's right and I'm wrong. And washing your hands is very
big.
Did
you do any of the... Yeah, no. My wife's hands are actually beat up because she does that so much. But she... the kids are... Like, when they come in from playing outside, the kids walk right to the bathroom, wash their hands. Like, she's got it down to even the baby, she's 21 months old. She walks into the house and washes her hands. Like, she knows.
Yeah, so, my wife's big on that. My youngest daughter, Madison, the six-year-old, had her science project this week. And it was on. My wife put a black light. And she likes to take pictures of your hands. If you wash them for 5 seconds, what it looks like. 10 seconds, what it looks like. All the germs disappearing the longer you wash your hands. That was the science project. You wash it for 30 seconds, all the germs are gone. 20 seconds.
It's clever.
It was clever, yeah. But
clever.
For my wife, it's perfect. Because you knew that's so her. You know, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. So, in any event, well, enjoy that gluten-free nonsense or whatever it is you're eating. The
gluten-free
vegan,
nonsense.
Vegan
I like
pizza.
That, Mike.
So
taste free.
So we're gonna talk NFL after the break. We're gonna get into schedules and fantasy implications thereof. I want to talk a little bit about the draft, but we just got another minute or two here. You know, as far as performances that stood out, really, Nats, Mets. You know, Jacob DeGrom still not a win on the season, George. He's going to end up going through April. He's got one. He'll have one more shot at a win, but he did pick up 10 strikeouts last night. The numbers were fine, but unfortunately, he picks up the loss because the Mets can't hit.
I mean, you said it right. The Mets lineup right now is struggling to say the least. So I guess DeGrom, we're happy. We'll play the optimist here. Came back. He looked from the neck injury. He has start scratched on Friday. Came back, looked fine. But listen, the Mets lineup last night was Lagares, Conforto, Cabrera, and Cabrera's beat up too. He's limping all over the place. Bruce, Walker, Granderson, Rivera, and DeGrom. All right, that lineup's not going to hit very much. I think Matt Modica tweeted out late last night how Scherzer's going to have a field day against his lineup tonight, and he may be right. Because I don't think Suspeda's coming back yet. And several other guys aren't hitting as it is. Reyes is a bust right now. So, hey, if you want a no-hitter alert, Scherzer tonight could be it.
There we go. I have Scherzer throwing for my squad. So, hopefully, we do see that. Going over to the Braves, Phils real quick. Matt's guy, Ender Inciarte, that he put a lot of money in, 0-for-5. He continues to struggle right now, hitting .219. Freddie Freeman, 1-for-2. 3 walks, George. So that OPS average maintaining. He stole a base. Wow, I didn't even see that. So Tony Phillips, 2-for-4, 2 RBIs. He's loving his new home in Atlanta.
Tony Phillips?
33.
I think he retired quite a few decades ago.
What did I say, Tony?
Tony, yeah.
I said Tony?
Yep, the utility
Brandon,
man for Oakland.
Sorry. Jeez, well, that is a, that's a.
Once again, showing our age.
Some sort of weird Freudian slip, but in any way, Brandon Phillips continues his new Love is new home. Jared Eichhoff, he throws five innings yesterday and only gives up a run. He's actually pitching pretty well here. Seven strikeouts. So Eichhoff, another solid start there. Goes up against Garcia, only gives up a couple of runs there. The loss goes to Jim Johnson with the blown save there. So tough one there.
Jared, I turn my head and I cough.
Jeez, that's terrible. That was terrible.
Thank you for whoever hit the bell. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's a horrible way to go to end this second hour of the show. But we will talk schedules. We will talk NFL draft. One thing I'll be saying is I will be doing a live show NFL draft night on the first night of the draft, which is this Thursday, April 27th. We'll be live, myself, Corey Parson. I think there'll be a whole cast of characters calling in, joining in with us. It's going to be a little nutty because the studio is in a restaurant and things can get kind of lively there late on a Thursday night. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll talk a little bit about that draft and schedules and all that kind of stuff. Turn the page over to the NFL. We'll talk about MLB today as we move towards Fantasy Bagels and Baseball after this. But it's Mike and George, 2 hours down, 1 hour to go on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Join the Roto Experts in the morning after the break.